In the quiet town of Natchez, Mississippi, Rafer Acton committed an unspeakable crime against people he did not know for reasons we are about to explore. This is The World versus Rafer Acton. This podcast is the story of Rafer Acton, the man responsible for the Natchez massacre, an incident involving a single shooter and bomber who ripped the heart out of a small American town. This podcast is a documentary report and the prologue to the novel, The Probable Cause, a future tech cyber thriller by Case Lane. I'm Case Lane, the author of the Life Online book series. The Probable Cause is the third book in the Life Online book series, a series where events take place in the next century. So this is the backstory to those events. But as you're about to hear, Rafer Acton's actions are sadly relevant in any century. Now, this is a little different, right? A book prologue in a podcast, listening instead of reading. I decided to take this approach because the backstory is super interesting and raises a lot of questions. It's not crucial to the rest of the book. You'll get everything you need to follow the story in The Probable Cause. But this news report from the future about Rafer Acton's horrific crimes will provide you with context and information about the event that sets up the very first line in the Probable Cause book, which is, "You will not have a human jury." You understand, right? On the book, I'm going to leave you there with no spoilers. You can pre-order or buy The Probable Cause by Case Lane right now, during, or after you listen to the podcast. And I caution listeners that the content of this podcast can be considered disturbing, so listener discretion is advised. This story I'm going to tell is as much as I can try to explain about how investigators and speculators like me are determining why Rafer Acton committed this horrific act. In general, the idea is that based on Rafer's knowledge of a very, very, very ancient feud, he was seeking revenge. But what does revenge really mean, and why did he go to such lengths to accomplish it? Rafer Acton is in jail, in a U.S. federal prison awaiting trial for killing 172 people and injuring 139 others, the world's worst single massacre caused by one human being. The American people will be the first to bring him to justice at his trial for the Natchez massacre. Then, depending on how the transfer discussions work out, Rafer could go on trial again at the International Criminal Court in The Hague for crimes against humanity. Rafer is a national of two countries, Egypt and the UK. Most of his victims were from at least a half dozen other countries bordering the Mediterranean or Black Seas, and the criminal act was committed in yet another country, the United States. So people are considering the Natchez massacre to be a world crime, and labeling Rafer Acton the most hated man in the world. What's extraordinary about the title he has now is Rafer started down a path that for millions actually made him one of the most celebrated people in the world. Not by everyone, of course, but certainly by his faction, his own fans, who helped him carry out his revenge plan. When I began researching the motives behind Rafer Acton's horrific actions in Natchez, I was prompted to recall an incident from elementary school about a neighborhood bully. A mean, popular girl who declared one day to all the other kids that we must hate this other girl. I don't know how she picked her, and to this day I don't know why. But Rafer Acton has reminded us that bullying can take place on a global scale. People can be encouraged to transform from polite, or at least indifferent neighbors, to dangerous enemies overnight. Usually there is a story, a reason, or a memory that prompts the behavior, but sometimes there's not. Sometimes there's just one person, like Rafer Acton, who convinces many, many other people to hate. I wanted to delve into this story a bit because of what it means to us as human beings on Earth. We have so many high-tech toys that have changed our lives, great advances that make it possible to live longer, travel around the world, see other cultures, and communicate instantly with people. But we've also got this instinct for survival that I guess still after all this time lets us behave so cruelly and irrationally towards others. For some distant evolutionary reasons, we seem to have to keep on proving that we are not weak, that we are better, stronger than at least one other person we can point to around us. As you are listening to this report, try and ask yourself, how was it possible for Rafer to do what he did? What was he really up to? What point was he trying to prove? Is he trying to rub in our faces that the technological advances of the last century are useless in the face of our basic human instinct to demonstrate our power over the next guy? Or is he genuinely angry about an ancient feud, so he created his own opportunity to weigh in on a new outcome? And if it's just Rafer Acton's anger management problem, why was he able to galvanize a global movement that has displaced more than 500,000 people in 16 countries? How did he get so many people involved in his revenge and then together create so much damage? How did this one man convince people to destroy the lives of their neighbors, friends, and strangers because of a story that has played in his ancestral village for 33 centuries? Yes, I said 33. That's 33 times 100 years. That's how long Rafer's family have been complaining about the Hittite people. And I know it sounds ridiculous, but investigators are now beginning to realize that because of those complaints and those often told stories, Rafer may have decided to seek his bloody revenge. If you think it's impossible to be in revenge mode for 3 millennia, just think about all the wars and battles and anger we have around us today. Maybe there's somebody you have not spoken to for 10 years. Maybe your grandfather told you never to date someone with a certain family name he remembers from an incident back in the village at the turn of the last century. Maybe the media tells you every night who your enemies are, and maybe your enemies are telling their kids they hate you. It does not take long for 3,000 years to pass when the story is repeated and repeated and repeated without advancing our civilization or ourselves. Rafer Acton is this good-looking, personable, well-off, charismatic young man who went to Mississippi with one objective in mind. In Natchez, he walked into the renovated Decker plantation house and open fire. Then he walked through the hall from one end to an exit down towards the river, and when he was clear of the building, he activated a timer and blew up all inside. You may have seen the videos and heard the audio recordings made by dozens of people who were witnesses to this crime and to Rafer's arrest. Rafer was picked up in Natchez with the guns still in his hands. He originally said all of the crime scene videos taken at Decker Plantation that day were him, but then he said maybe there were other members of the anti-Hittite movement in Natchez at the same time. Then he said he may or may not have committed the crime, depending on how you view the crimes against his own people. Nobody knows what he is planning to say at trial, but what the world does know is Rafer has brought his anti-Hittite movement, which began around the countries of the Mediterranean and Black Seas, over 7,000 miles to America to inflict lasting damage. He picks a U.S. state whose very name conjures up memories of ethnic conflict, but one of that state's most historic towns, a lovely town, still evoking an air of peace and stability few would remember. It's striking that Rafer came out of a dusty dirt village where he was within 500 miles of tens of thousands of supposed Hittites and came all the way down old Mississippi Way to devastate forever the lives of more than 300. To begin to answer why, we need to find out more about this man and the world that shaped him into the position he finds himself in today. I want to take you through this story of how an educated, upper-middle-class, British-Egyptian man devastated one of America's quietest historic corners with an act of medieval horror. Perhaps Natchez, being a sleepy rural town, reminded Rafer of a quiet freedom only possible when one is detached from the moving parts of a big city and its relentless beeping communications, flashing messages, and omnipresent surveillance. Because this is what he did. He dropped out of big city life, and he went back 33 centuries while living in our modern age. So we're going to his ancestral village. Not the one in Cornwall at the western tip of England where his father is from, but the one out near Moghara Lake in northwest Egypt, where his mother's ancestors come from. Telling to Rafer's story, the village there probably looks very similar to what it looked like 3,300 years ago. The world we step into when we get out into the desert would actually be partially recognizable to its Bronze Age inhabitants. The desert has never changed from yellow light sand. We can see some modern farm tools, but also camels. Gender and religious rules are obviously not to be broken around here. You can tell by the way people look at you with a kind of warning in their eyes. We see comms and TVs and transports, but cooking is done mostly over a fire, not a stove. And there are a couple of solar panels, but also some wood gathering. I'm actually not sure what to make of this. What year is it here? The Bronze Age ancestor and a kid in hovering transport would be equally at home. Now imagine Rafer. He is half Egyptian on his mother's side and half British, English, on his father's side. He was born in England, grew up speaking English, and went to old English boarding schools, just like the ones you see in the movies. His father is a scientist and his mother is a banker. Relatives say they put the kids in traditional schools for discipline reasons. Rafer was too unruly for online learning and would not focus on his lessons. But with jet black curly hair and what I'll bluntly call a little tan to his skin, Rafer probably looked like a foreigner to many British schoolboys. And that fact, say his cousins, prompted him to ask his parents to let him travel frequently to Egypt, where he felt more at home. When Rafer went to Egypt, he decided he did not want to stay in the well-off suburbs of Alexandria where his mother grew up. After a trip at the age of 10 to his ancestral village in the northwest desert where more distant relatives live, he asked if he could stay out there on every single school holiday. No one knows why Rafer chose to remain in the village, but his decision may have altered the lives of millions of people. In the villages of northwestern Egypt, within 100 or 200 miles of Cairo, you may find a pool of water and a group of families who have depended on that tiny hidden oasis in the desert for their survival for generations. In a country where over 100 million people crowd around the volatile waters of the Nile River, out in the sunken corners of the vast Sahara, the locals scrape by with a more traditional existence. Time moves slowly. There is no jostling for land or water security, and maybe because of that, memories run long and deep. Here, you only have to find one living man, Rafer's grandfather, to tell you the story of the Hittite invasion as told to a vulnerable teenager as if the tales and reports happened only yesterday.
جنود أجانب جاءوا إلى هذه القرية ووصل الجنود على متن عربات.
He's saying the Hittites came to this village in three-man chariots with spears sticking out of the wheels. So when they rolled through the people, they ripped them apart.
ظهرت الجنود بلا رحمة. لم يكن لديهم أي صبر.
He said there was no mercy, no patience. Within minutes, the villages were destroyed, returned back to the desert sand, people were devastated, and lives and hope were gone forever. The history is shocking and sad, but let me remind you, neither Grandpa nor anyone else alive on this earth today was alive during the Hittite attack on the village. That fact does not make it any less of a sad story, but in those days, for three millennia, more time than has existed since the birth of Christ, ancient Egypt was a defining civilization. There was order, languages, arts, culture, but also wars, rivalry, and conquest dominating the region. Remarkably, given Rafer's revenge action, Egyptian and Hittite leaders may have signed one of the world's earliest peace treaties. Remnants can be seen today, preserved at the town of Başkale in Turkey. But survivors of the Hittite invasion of Egypt, we can guess, did not believe in the words of a global peace treaty. They were not fans of globalization and diplomacy. After all, after the attack, they were homeless, starving, and ruined, and probably looking for someone to blame forever. They drifted away from the Nile, hoping to find a home where they could live in peace. And there they stayed, repeating the story of their upheaval for the next 33 centuries. This is the story Rafer Acton wrote upon to launch his wave of destruction. But why has the story resonated for so long? Well, one reason might be the mention of those chariots. In Rafer's manifestos, he often writes about how one can and should use superior technology to win a war. He's not talking about the obvious. He doesn't believe only in a bigger army or a moral ideology, the chance of favorable weather, or even better versions of the same type of weapon that your enemy already has, like more powerful guns. He says, focus on creating a weapon or using existing technology in a way that can overwhelm your enemy, even if you are outnumbered. And he writes about this in terms of having people around him who can design and build and think about how to create these weapons. He is into strategic brain power and using technological prowess, essentially for his own gains. He's a little bit obsessed with this idea. His focus is to figure out how to adapt or enhance technology to win. He seems bitter that Egyptians were not ready with their own chariots when the Hittites attacked. And when it comes to Egypt's ancient battlefield loss, this is not an all's fair in love and war kind of guy. He wants a do-over because the Egyptians were surprised and completely overwhelmed by their invaders. Rafer frequently refers to the project to build and drop the atomic bomb, the Manhattan Project, as his favorite example of tactical focusing as a group or as a nation on creating a superior weapon to win a war. So maybe those Hittite chariots were the atomic bomb of the Bronze Age, and the image stuck in people's minds and the story continued to be told as a warning to future generations. But what's the warning exactly? Don't allow yourself to be weak against your neighbors? Build up your superior technology? Maybe Rafer was thinking Egypt did not do that and lost. But history tells us the Hittite people also eventually lost. As a people we could point to, Hittites would be gone within 300 years of rolling through Egypt. Egyptians are still here. But the Hittite descendants, we can guess, live around the Mediterranean and the Black Seas and probably all of Europe and the Americas and everywhere else. And no one has called them Hittites in the modern age. Yet Rafer Act and managed to galvanize a whole movement that claimed to be able to pick Hittites out of a crowd within any one of the 20 or more nationalities to which the majority of descendants probably belong to today. And this selection was able to upend regular people's lives, creating a massive refugee crisis around the Mediterranean and the Black Seas, which frankly has stunned the world. So back in the village in Egypt, we had a few more questions for the locals. We asked if Rafer ever looked like a killer, like someone who could cause so much damage. This woman says, no, of course not. He's good looking. He looks like a doll. Another woman beside her is nodding her head and laughing and agreeing, and so she keeps going. Now she's saying he's light-skinned in English. I guess having those features around here rules you out as a future troublemaker. But Rafer's cousins have revealed the Hittite invasion story struck a particular chord for him. When Rafer was 15 years old, he refused to return to his parents in England, and over time, they actually lost track of him. They knew he was with relatives, but they had no idea what he was up to. After Natchez, when his parents were questioned by U.S. law enforcement, they couldn't say what Rafer's address was, if he'd finished school, or was married, or had children. They knew he was 25 years old, but they had not seen him or spoken to him in 6 to 10 years, depending on who you asked. What we've now learned is that during that time, Rafer joined dozens of other idle young men who believed in revenge. The thirst for revenge that does not fade over generations. In the village, there are not a lot of distractions, and despite having access to comms and computers and educational applications and online job training, a typical boy around here does nothing. And I'm specifically saying boy because the girls are working from the time they can stand. I see the girls cooking, cleaning, gathering fuel, looking after smaller children, managing the household. I mean, you can picture it, but I digress. For idle boys, there's no motivation to study or work, and without parents really pushing him to have a career or find a wife, Rafer apparently came up with his own options. With his friends, or maybe by himself, he created the revenge plan. According to his cousins, one day, Rafer led his friends to decide, just like a neighborhood bully, that they were going to identify and attack the Hittites in revenge for the attack on Egypt. But how do you isolate a people who have not separately existed for 3,000 years? Well, you use technology. In his revenge plan, Rafer finally found a profession he could embrace and the studying he wanted to occupy his time. He became interested in computer programming and coding because he spent a lot of time online and was thinking about ways to use technology to create his superior weapon and enact his ultimate revenge. To identify the Hittites in today's populations, he researched language, culture, naming conventions, and historical records. For a guy who may not have completed all of his mandatory educational requirements, he was a pretty good student. He mapped out all the ancient Hittite territories, identified where people were likely to have settled, and then started the rumor mill rolling. In every country in the region where Hittite descendants were believed to be living, Rafer and his friends began pointing out the difference between suspected Hittite people and the other nationals of the country. Think of the Spanish Inquisition or the color lines of apartheid South Africa, and you will see Rafer's tactics. Language proved particularly ominous for many people because the Hittite language has persisted in many parts of the region, and those that were able to speak it were instant targets. Many of those people thought the language they spoke was a dialect of their national language, but Rafer's group identified tones and words, again using computer applications, that compared local speech to Hittite and revealed the dialect group belonged with the ancient tongue. they created comparison videos showing the connections and widely distributed their so-called evidence online. This was a shock to people who had never been identified as speaking a foreign language, but were now considered foreigners in their own country. Just when you think humanity transcends such nonsense, you realize how feeble our peace really is. The now suddenly called Hittites had been living as nationals. They are nationals of their countries. They were contributing, working, studying, and then they were singled out by one man's targeted hatred. Human behavior is held in check by the rule of law, or fear of a powerful head of state and his henchmen, or fear of your neighbor or adversary, or mutually assured destruction. But people are also looking for leverage. Our basic instinct is survival. No one wants to be the weakest person in the room. So when a chance comes to flex some muscle, people sadly usually take it. Older brothers beat up younger brothers. Older sisters slap around younger sisters. Men rape women. Majority communities burn down minority communities. And ethnic governments order armies to trample neighbors. The attacks are made even easier to carry out when everyone is doing it. Because of Rafer's hate movement, within a year, across more than a dozen countries, order was shattered and people descended into chaos. The locals started to believe the radicals and began forcing suspected Hittites from their homes, businesses, education, recreation, jobs, government positions, and the country itself. Now, some demographers argue that this backlash was a jostling for resources because these countries around the Mediterranean and Black Sea regions are among the most densely populated and under-resourced in the world. Unemployment is high, healthcare and education are strained, desirable housing is expensive, and history has handed the area the entire lifespan of human conflict on Earth. So another uprising was inevitable, they say. Some believe if it wasn't the Hittites, it would have been another ethnic group. People are always fighting for land and homes and any excuse to push out people they do not like. It was all waiting to happen, they say. The rags were already soaked in gasoline, and Rafer, they claim, just lit the match. Okay, but it was the now called Hittites, and the upheaval led to dozens of refugee camps and the humanitarian decision to resettle thousands of displaced people in far-off lands like the United States. Rafer and his friends created the anti-Hittite movement practically overnight. Destroying the Hittites became the life work they could not find in their village. This cause became their ability to flex their power and muscle and demonstrate their perceived superiority to the entire world. A bunch of undereducated boys hanging out in ancient villages, pick a story from history, pick a people from ancient times, and recreate the ethnic map of the world. As a result, at least a dozen organizations sponsored Hittite refugee resettlement in the United States. One of the biggest is the Global Christian Coalition's efforts across the country, including in the town of Natchez, Mississippi. Silence is the sound of the Natchez Trace Parkway. That's the road from Nashville to Natchez that more or less parallels the Mississippi River and has existed as a popular trail for 10,000 years, and in modern times brought gamblers, dreamers, hope, and frustration into the little town on these waters. Thank you. Perhaps it is Natchez's pastoral, gentle nature, unchanged from its same pace for four centuries, just like the villages in northwest Egypt, that attracted Rafer to this location. Everything about what happened here is exacerbated by the setting. It's so calm and gentle, and they have awnings over the storefronts, spritzers in the muggy summer streets, and some of the roads are not even paved around here. This is the Deep South. You won't find many foreigners around here, but you will find churches and those that reach out to help others in need. The reason hundreds of Hittites ended up in Natchez is because a childless senior citizen named Veronica Decker bequeathed her family's plantation house and land to the Global Christian Coalition, and the organization effectively transformed the mansion into a home for displaced refugees. They brought 400 people to transition to American life here, and Rafer Acton followed. Why Rafer targeted this particular group of refugees is unknown. More than a dozen United Nations refugee resettlement camps and hundreds of other unofficial sites around the world have taken in the Hittites. Rafer really went out of his way to seek his revenge in Natchez. Research says he has never been there before. The closest he had come to this region was a trip to Disney World in Florida when he was 9 years old. 10 days before the massacre, Rafer arrived in the United States, apparently by boat from the Bahamas. Which is interesting, because he is said to have an affinity for desert and interior lands and is no fan of open oceans or even swimming pools. He rented transport in Miami, Florida a week before volunteers from the Global Christian Coalition opened the renovated Decker Plantation House in Natchez. As volunteers finished construction, placed fresh sheets on donated beds, tested water stations, and stocked food to feed the families, no one could have imagined this young British man traveling across the southeast U.S. states with a diabolical revenge plan etched into his mind. But when he arrived, Rafer went from a hotel in Mobile, Alabama, assembled a bomb in a family-run bed and breakfast in Natchez, and then walked to the Decker Plantation and entered through the always unlocked front doors of the main house. The evidence to be presented at his U.S. trial will show that Rafer placed a plain cardboard box on the mansion's entry table about midway down the front hallway. The table contained not only photos of the Decker family through the generations, but also, surprisingly, pictures of the descendants of African-American people who once worked the plantation. Without a single person questioning his actions, Rafer used his calm to set a timer. He then walked to the dining room, where hundreds of men, women, and children who had come to America seeking peace, and dozens of volunteers from around the country who wanted to be useful to their fellow humans, were having lunch. He opened fire. Calmly walking through the crowd, not looking at people's faces, apparently not registering the screams, he continued walking and shooting. He seemed to know how to navigate from the front door and exit through the back without hesitation. When he was outside, he might have looked back once before activating his timer. Witnesses say he walked, he did not run, but he seemed to know how far away he had to be when the house was blown up. 172 living souls joined hundreds of faded residents on the plantation lands to be confined forever to a final grave on earth built on wood, smoke, and fire. All for a story, a distant memory, an irrational revenge that a community refused to stop repeating. Most of the people killed were Hittite refugees. A refugee never knows what's going to happen to their intended life plans. Depending on the circumstances, some imagine they will soon die, others hold out hope of finding a new home. But either way, in the moment of their escape, their past lives end. The refugee's lament can be captured in a song called Say Goodbye to Tomorrow, where a child sings about being left with no hope and no future. Refugees go into camps and their lives stop still. Millions of people can only eat and sleep each day as they wait for relief to come from any direction. You can imagine that the people who made it to Natchez were thinking they were almost free and they had a chance to start again. Rafer Acton destabilized their lives and the lives of tens of thousands of others for his hate-filled revenge. And in the end, after all of this, do we really understand why? Many people can hear a sad story and do not take action. Why did he? Was it really so important to demonstrate his strength just like any bully? We will probably never know the real reason or figure out if we can prevent this type of horror in the future. So is there anything we can do as human beings on Earth to stop hatred before it spreads? After all, we do know that hating people for no reason and holding on to revenge for generations is destructive to the hater and the victims in our modern world. There's no need for a perpetual fear of others. We have sufficient resources. We can function in peace and harmony. We can figure out a way to convince everyone to take the right path. Or we can hear Say Goodbye to Tomorrow and its tearful despair continue to play until it plays for us. I'm going to bring this report to a close by reading the words left by a child writing to say goodbye to the world when her community became the latest victims of someone else's hatred. These are the words to say goodbye to tomorrow. She writes, "I was living peacefully in my native land, trying to make sense of how much we had, when the silence shattered and the steel wheels turned, and we watched in horror as our whole world burned. There is no chance to say farewell. There is no time to awaken from the spell. It's just finished and forgotten, with no one left to tell. We remember only the words we heard before we fell. Say goodbye to tomorrow. There is nothing there. The world we once had holds only fear. Our time has passed. Our moment is gone. The last chance we have is to be remembered in song. We are nothing now, not a people, not a place. Say goodbye to tomorrow and hello to empty space. No more home, no more land, no more blowing leaves. We pray, we cry, we crawl on our knees. We will soon be forgotten. This much we know, even if we make it to a land of sun or snow. Our names are gone, our people too. Every story we told remains with a few. This is the lot of the weak, an oft-repeated tale. No hope, no chance, because we were frail. We are nothing now, our dreams are gone. The memories will last only for the strong. There's no sudden joy, no moment to share. We are done for this time. We have not been spared." Rafer Acton will go on trial for the Natchez massacre, but he faces no charges for any crime associated with the destruction of thousands of other lives uprooted by his hate movement. And now for some follow-up. If you want to know what happened next to Rafer Acton after the Natchez massacre and at his trial and the technology he plans to use to continue his revenge against the Hittites, the story is in The Probable Cause, a future tech cyber thriller by Case Lane, the third book in the Life Online book series. Each book can be read independently. You can find the book The Probable Cause by Case Lane at your favorite e-book store, like Amazon, Apple iBookstore, Barnes & Noble, or Kobo. You can get tons more information about the Life Online book series, including a free transcript of this podcast, at my website, Case Lane's Spinning World, www.claneworld.com. Connect on social media to Case Lane World for your questions, comments, or feedback on this podcast. This podcast was produced by Case Lane Enterprises. Thank you for listening to The World versus Rafer Acton, the prologue podcast for the book The Probable Cause, a future tech cyber thriller by Case Lane.